All right, we're going to go ahead and get started in, we left off in 2 Samuel last week, and so we left off on number 12. Number 10 was talking about the troubles that David had from within his own house after he had sinned with Bathsheba, and because of that, he had a lot of hardship in his home, in his own family, and we looked at four of his children that ended up paying the cost for David's sin. And in number 11, it said a general feeling of unrest plagues the remainder of David's reign. The men of Israel threatened to split from Judah, and David must suppress another uprising in chapter 20. And so the peaceful reign that David had, he ends up thrown away, in a sense, because of that one night with Bathsheba. Now, number 12, it says the book's appendix, which means, you know, additional things at the end, includes information concerning a three-year famine in the land, which is in chapter 21, then a song of David in chapter 22, and a record of the exploits of David's bravest warriors in chapter 3. These were the David's mighty men. And lastly, David's sinful census and the ensuing plague in chapter 24. That's what the remaining chapters are in 2 Samuel. Now, some practical applications are this. First of all, these are some things, these are lessons that we need to learn from this, the events here in 2 Samuel. First of all, is that anyone can fall. Even a godly man like David, who truly desired to follow God and who was richly blessed by God, was susceptible to temptation. David's sin with Bathsheba should be a warning to all of us to guard the heart. 1 Corinthians 10:12 says, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." You may think, "Oh, I could never commit adultery. I could never murder someone. I could never do something like that." You'd be very surprised what your heart would has the capability of doing when you're not walking with God and you allow the flesh to control you. And that's what the illustration of David shows us. Letter B here says, "God is gracious to forgive even the most awful of sins when we truly repent. However, healing the wound caused by sin does not always erase the scar." And you can live the life that you want to. You know, God has given us freedom and liberty. But when you choose sin, there's always a price. There's always consequences, and there will always be scars. And sometimes they're hard to remove out of your life, if not ever out of your life. And that's why it's better to not get them in the first place. Letter C, sin has natural consequences. And even after he was forgiven, David reaped what he had sown. How much better to avoid sin in the first place rather than having to seek forgiveness later. And then 2 Samuel concludes with a chronicle of royal succession in which David, on his deathbed, made provision for his son Solomon to follow him on the throne. So your fill-in there is Solomon. This must be dated at 971 BC, is when Solomon became king. Number 15, most of David's life is a testimony to the way God blesses the godly or righteous. Next one there, David and his dynasty demonstrate what it means to rule under God. When you don't have direction, you will be dismayed. And number 17, taken together, the books of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel demonstrate the contrast between Saul and David. Saul began well, but ended poorly, having forsaken the path of obedience to God's commands. So your fill in there is forsaken. Saul forsook them for his own way, for what everyone else would think of him. So rather than by obedience, he forsook God's commands. David, although lapsing at times from obedience to God, repented of his sins and began a golden age of Israelite glory. So your fill in there is repented. That's the biggest difference between Saul and David. David knew how to repent. Saul never did. Saul never repents. And I believe it was because Saul was a very prideful man, especially towards the end of his, as he started to go down the wrong path. He allowed his pride to make his decisions, and I believe it kept him from ever repenting. In all the times that Saul disobeyed, and again it said, he never repented, and it led him onto a path of his own destruction. Number 18, God selected David's dynasty to continue on Israel's throne forever, culminating in the reign of Jesus Christ. So your fill in there is forever. All right, so let's go out to the, well, it's not necessarily a simple outline, but it's an outline of the events of 2 Samuel. So we're just going to run through these real quick because, again, I don't want to spend so much time here. I want to actually hopefully get through 1 and 2 Kings tonight. Now, David mourns for Saul and Jonathan, the very first chapter, because in 1 Samuel, that's when Saul and Jonathan are killed in battle. And so 2 Samuel starts off with David mourning for them. After that, we see David's way to kingship and chapters 2 through 5. And we see that David's anointed king of Judah, that David rewards Jabesh Gilead for caring for Saul's body. And you'll have to read more about that, about what happened there for the men of Jabesh Gilead, what they did for Saul. Then we see the rebellious Ishbosheth appointed king of Israel, and that there's a brief war between Israel and Judah. We see that, and David has some sons born to him while he is there in Hebron. Abner defects from Saul's army to David, and yet Joab still kills Abner out of revenge. You know, it says jealousy there, but it's more so revenge for the Abner killing his brother Amasa. And so that's the reason why Joab kills him. Ishbosheth is murdered, and his head is brought to David. And the men who murdered him think that they're going to get a reward, and they end up costing their own lives by laying their hand upon the king. David is finally anointed king of all Israel, and it has been 7 years since David's anointing by Samuel. Okay, so your fill in there is 7. All right, so next one. David's early successes as king. You see some of his victories in chapters 5 through 10. David captures Jerusalem from the Jebusites for his capital. So your fill in there is Jerusalem. We see that David then takes more wives and has more sons. And you see David's victories over the Philistines. David brings the ark to Jerusalem. God makes a covenant with David. Some of the nations David subdued, you see those in chapter 8. David's administration of Israel. Then you see an interesting scenario where David cares for Jonathan's son Mephibosheth in chapters 9. And then you see that David defeats the Ammonites and Arameans. And after that we see in Roman numeral 4 here, David's difficulties. And basically you see that the rest of 2 Samuel from 11 to chapter 21. Right off the bat in chapter 11 you have the sin of David and Bathsheba, their adultery and murder. You see Nathan the prophet confronts David in chapter 12. You see the death of Bathsheba's son in chapter 12 as well, which was one of the consequences of their sin. And you see the birth of Solomon. The birth of Solomon. So Solomon was a child from the union of David and Bathsheba after David marries her. Letter B, David conquers the Ammonites. And after that, we see the rape of David's daughter Tamar by her brother Amnon. You see that Amnon rapes Tamar. We see David's inaction. He doesn't do anything about it. And so because of that, Absalom takes matters in his own hand and kills Amnon and flees. Letter D, you see Absalom's rebellion against God and his family. Absalom's rebellion against God and his family. All right, drop down to letter E there. We see the rebellion of Sheba, who tries to set himself up as king but is defeated. He tries to rebel against David after Absalom is killed. Then you see David's officers and his administration in chapter 20. The Gibeonites get justice concerning Saul's wrongful acts against them in chapter 21. David's age shows in a battle with Philistia. He's almost killed in battle. Thankfully, he is saved from getting slain. Then after that, you see battles against giants that were in the land still, and several of them were Goliath's own brothers. After that, you see the Song of David and the last words of David in chapter 22 and then 23. Then you see David's 33 mighty men and their victories. It's just really cool when you see that, what these men were able to do. I mean, we live in a world that shows, you know, superheroes and their amazing feats. But think of this back in the time where there is no guns, and yet these men fought with a sword in hand, maybe a spear, or different weapons, hand weapons, and yet they were able to deliver all these victories. For example, Adino, the Esnite, he slew 800 men single-handedly in one time. I mean, going out there into an army and killing 800 men by himself. That's amazing, you know, just to think of the capability. I mean, I couldn't kill someone. I couldn't even kill one person, probably, you know. I don't know. But here, you know, he was able to deliver this victory, and being able to do, he had this ability and skill, and he was trained. He trained himself for this. And it's a study on itself. It's amazing when you look at these men. Secondly is Eleazar. He fought all alone until the sword clave to his hand. Meaning he had been fighting for so long that the muscles in his hand seized up, so he could not let go of his sword. I mean, that's how long he had been fighting and how strong he was. Go ahead, Dean.
Sorry, what was the answer to the Mongolian Edino?
800 men. Sorry. Yeah. And so, I mean, these are events that people look at and they make stories about, you know, or they write fiction about. These are actually things that happened. This is recorded history. This is actually true that these men were able to do these things. This isn't a fantasy thing. But, I mean, these men were mighty men. And lastly was Shammah, who defended a field of bean plants, lentils, single-handedly. So, lentils. So, I mean, he was there. Everyone else fled as the Philistines attacked. And he took on the whole army by himself. And he defended the lentils and succeeded. That's amazing. It really is. And, I mean, to think of the events that happened, these men were there. And it's actually recorded history. Now, David also records the bravery of three other mighty men who risked their lives to get water for David from a well in Bethlehem. And then after that, we see the list of the 30 mighty men, the rest of chapter 23. Now, in chapter 24, we see David's sinful census. David's sinful census. Yes, census. C-E-N-S-U-S. It's a matter of pride instead of war. David wanted to know how many people is there in Israel, which God has said don't number them. Yeah, he said I want to know the number, and it wasn't for war, but it was for his own pride. And so David repents of asking about it. He realizes he made a horrible mistake, and God says, "Well, there's going to be a punishment for this. You get to choose the punishment." And rather than him choosing, he said, "Lord, you are gracious. I'll let you choose." And so God sends a plague for 3 days. And while people are dying, David is sorrowful, and he goes and he builds an altar, and God stays his hand and stays the plague. So the plague doesn't even last the 3 days. He actually changes his decision on that. Now, 1 Kings. Let's go ahead and get to 1 Kings. All right, so the author of 1 Kings is unknown. Nobody really knows specifically who wrote 1 Kings, but tradition is that it was written by the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah. So that's the tradition. There's three key chapters. The first one is in chapter 2, where Solomon becomes the next king. And then in chapter 8, we see the dedication of Solomon's temple. And then chapter 17, we see Elijah appears and his prayer. And some key verses is chapter 2, verse 4, where we see God's promise to David and his lineage that he would never forsake him. Then in chapter 3, verses 5 through 14, we see God appears to Solomon and Solomon's request for wisdom. Then chapter 11, verse 1, we see Solomon was led astray by his love for many women. And that's what was his ultimate downfall. 17:1, Elijah had great power with God by prayer, where he once one prayer and it stops raining for 3.5 years. That's amazing. There's one main theme through 1 Kings is national morality will be controlled by the leader's character. So your first fill-in is morality, M-O-R-A-L-I-T-Y, morality. So your first one is morality, and second one is character. So number 2 is character. So national morality will be controlled by the leader's character. Now there's several key people. First of all is David, Solomon, Bathsheba, Elijah, Ahab, Jezebel, Rehoboam, Jeroboam, various kings of Judah and Israel. There's so many different people in 1 Kings. There's a lot of key people. Key places, Jerusalem, Gibeon, Solomon's Temple, Mount Carmel, Bethel, Shechem. The date of writing was sometime between 750 to 650 BC. So 750 to 650 BC is your next fill-in. So 750 to 650 BC, somewhere in that time frame.
But you know how you're saying, or not you're saying, that the tradition was, it was written by Isaiah and Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, were they in the same time frame, or was it just passed on?
It was around the same time frame.
All right.
Isaiah prophesied in the 700s. That's where he was lived in that time frame. So it was sometime between there. So 750 to 650 would have covered the time of Isaiah and Jeremiah. So they were both. That was in their the time area that they were prophesying.
So, but they weren't. But they didn't match. They didn't like know each other. So.
I'd have to look at the years.
Oh, okay.
Isaiah was around when. Let me think here. Isaiah was around when Hezekiah was there. They would have known each other. They would have been maybe familiar with each other. Yeah, because Isaiah, he was around the time of Hezekiah. Because actually in Isaiah chapter 38, 39, 40, and 41, I think,
mm-hmm.
is actually almost identical to Second Kings. So it's very interesting. Or Second Chronicles is very close to, identical to that portion of Scripture, almost word for word. And so it's very possible that, you know, Isaiah had wrote these. Jeremiah, again, he was during the time of the fall of Jerusalem, which was in the days of Hezekiah's son. So, well, actually, it would have been two more generations. So maybe they didn't know each other. Maybe it might have been a generation or two between them.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was very, very close in time.
That's because I was wondering, because it always seems like when you look at the prophets, they were like well off from each other. It's like,
mm-hmm.
this prophet's over here, and then you were just like,
wrong. Yeah. Now that I think about it, I would say probably that if they knew each other, it's a very slim possibility, but they were probably within 70 years of each other. Because what I mean by that is Isaiah was during the reign of Hezekiah. Manasseh reigned for over 52 years, and so on. I don't think Isaiah was young in Hezekiah's age reign, because actually he starts prophesying, I want to say, in the reign of Uzziah. I'd have to look at the beginning intro of Jeremiah, because it says, you know, what kings that Jeremiah prophesied under, or Isaiah prophesied under. And so, you know, Manasseh reigned for so long. Isaiah traditionally was said to have been killed possibly by Manasseh. And so in Hebrews, where it says some were torn asunder, that they're kind of, they, people refer, think that referring to Isaiah. And so that Isaiah was martyred. Now, we don't know, it's just tradition, mm-hmm. But there's a very possibility, because Manasseh was a very evil man, and he shed a lot of blood. And so I would not be surprised if he would try to kill anybody that was stood up for God. But then after that, Josiah reigns, like Manasseh's son reigns for just a couple years, but then Josiah is born, and Josiah reigns for several years. And it's actually during the reign of Josiah's sons when you read about Jeremiah. So they're close, but I don't think they would have known each other. I'm pretty sure they probably wouldn't, now that I think about it. Now that I start seeing the timeline, they most likely wouldn't have.
So that makes a little more sense. Because when you said, like, the way it's written by prophet, I was like, mm-hmm. Well, they were, like, sitting next to each other, like, all the rain. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought they knew each other.
So probably what my imagination, or what I would believe, is that probably Isaiah wrote a bunch of stuff, and then Jeremiah maybe would have added where Isaiah left off until the fall of Jerusalem, and then that's where 2 Kings ends. So it's probably a collaboration of the both of them. The neat thing about it with Isaiah and Jeremiah, Isaiah prophet is there in his, and during his ministry, the northern 10 tribes fall and go into captivity. And then Jeremiah, Judah, and Jerusalem fall and go into captivity. So these are the two main prophets that, you know, God brings judgment upon his people. And they're the ones, you know, they're the ones prophesying, telling the people this is going to happen, you know. But they didn't heed. They didn't take the warning serious. So, again, God always has a remnant, and he also always has a witness. And Jeremiah and Isaiah were witnesses, trying to tell the people, look, judgment's coming, repent, turn back, and they didn't. And because of that, judgment came. So, back to notes. Let's go back to some general thoughts and overview of 1 Kings. It was an excellent question. It really was. And so, general thoughts and overview of 1 Kings. Number one, the book of 1 Kings spans about 350 more years, describing the reign of Solomon and continuing the story of kings over the divided kingdom. Secondly, the purpose of writing. This book is the sequel to 1 and 2 Samuel and begins by tracing Solomon's rise to kingship after the death of David. The story begins with a united kingdom, but ends in a nation divided into two kingdoms, known as Judah, it's your first villain. So that's your next villain is Judah and Israel. That would be the... it would be Judah and Israel. It's under number two is what it would be. So Judah and Israel. That's what they would be known as, the two different kingdoms. Now, 1 and 2 Kings are combined into one book in the Hebrew Bible, just like Samuel is. They show why God's people were conquered by Babylon and taken captive when they should have been conquerors. 1 Kings starts with Solomon and ends with Elijah. So your next two villains is Solomon and Elijah.
What number is that? Three?
It'd be number four on the notes. So 1 Kings starts with Solomon and ends with Elijah. The difference between the two gives you an idea as to what lies between. Solomon was born after a palace scandal between David and Bathsheba. And like his father, he had a weakness for women, and Satan would use that to bring him down. Number six, Solomon did well at first, praying for wisdom and building a temple to God that took 7 years. So number six on your notes, the first villain is seven. So it took 7 years. And the second villain, but then he spent 13 years building a palace for himself. So he took 13 years to build his own palace. So both villains for number 6 is 7 and then 13. His accumulation of many wives led him to worship their idols and led him away from God. Thus, in turn, led the nation away from God, and even the preaching of Elijah could not bring them back. Now, Elijah tried, even to challenging the idols to overpower God, and God won. This made Queen Jezebel angry, and she ordered Elijah's death. So he ran away and said, "Let me die." God sent food to the prophet and spoke to him, but Elijah never regained his confidence in the Lord after that due to depression. Practical application. In between Solomon and Elijah, you will find it all. Rebellion, corruption, courage, and faith. You will see that their world is much like ours. Things haven't changed, and neither has God. The quiet, gentle sound that encouraged Elijah will encourage you. Make sure that you listen for it and listen to it so that you can obey every word and be blessed again. All right, number 10. The books of 1 and 2 Kings were so named because they record and interpret the reigns of all the kings of Israel and Judah, except for Saul. Number 11. The books of 1 and 2 Kings were written to record history. So your first villain is record. On number 11. First one is record. But more importantly, to teach the lessons of history. So your first villain is record. And the second one is teach. So the saying here is the books of 1 and 2 Kings were written to record history, but more importantly, to teach the lessons of history. Number 12, these books were written not simply to record facts of historical significance, but to reveal and preserve spiritual lessons which have timeless value. So your fill-in there for number 12 is reveal. So R-E-V-E-A-L, reveal. So these books were written not simply to record facts of historical significance, but to reveal and preserve spiritual lessons which have timeless value. Again, this stuff happened, good grief, 2,700 years ago. And yet we're still learning about it now. You know, it's still applicable to us to learn from these lessons that so we don't make the same mistakes. God reveals through these kings both the good and the bad so that we would take notice of them and say, look, let's not make the same mistake. It's better to learn from someone else's mistake than to make them yourself and carry the scars. So that's why God gives us these. It's not just, it is history, but it's not just history, right, if you know what I mean. And so it's very important for us to know 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, 1 and 2 Samuel. These are very important books that teach us about mankind, both the good and the bad. Now, these books show three main things. First of all, it shows that God is faithful to his promised word regarding Israel. Secondly, certain human activities affected God's dealings with his people and how God accomplished his purposes in spite of the opposition of his enemies and failure of his people. And then thirdly, it reveals God's faithfulness to his word, his sovereignty over his own and all other peoples, and God's patience and long-suffering with man. Number 14, these books testify to the unbelief and disobedience of all people, even the beneficiaries of God's election and blessing, meaning the chosen seed of Israel. It just shows that their unbelief and disobedience, not only theirs, but also the people in northern 10 tribes. Now, number 15, these books demonstrate that God has not cast off his disobedient people Israel, whom he chose to enjoy a privileged relationship with himself. Even though sometimes they turned their back on God, God did not cast them away. He had to chastise them, yes, but he never cast them off completely. Number 16, the history of the kings are discussed. Meaning, when you look at each king listed in 1 and 2 Kings, four details are usually mentioned for every single king. their mother, their age, the date of ascension, roughly when they did, and then the evaluation of their reign and their activities. So usually always said who their mother was, how old they were, and when they ascended the throne. And then talked a little bit about their reign and their activities. Now, no king's life is related in detail, but his work, worship, and walk with God is evaluated by using David and his reign and the Mosaic writings as standards for judgment. They were always compared about how David reigned. Every king was a comparison to see how he reigned in comparison to David and his walk with God and things of that nature. Now, the book of 1 Kings consists of 22 chapters and may be divided into two sections. The first 11 chapters cover the 40-year reign of Solomon and ends with his death. The last 11 chapters cover approximately the first 80 years after the dividing of the kingdom into Israel, which is the northern kingdom consisting of 10 tribes with its capital in Samaria, and Judah, which is the southern kingdom consisting of 2 tribes with its capital in Jerusalem. And so that's kind of the general thoughts and overview. And so we've got 5 minutes, so let's go ahead and try to quickly go through the outline of 1 Kings so I can start with 2 Kings next week, and we're going to really fly for this one. So, outline of 1 Kings. The first one, Solomon becomes king. So that's your first one for the outline, Emrio. Solomon becomes king. After that, you see David's last acts. And again, you see the whole list there. It breaks down of the acts that David does. You see Solomon removes potential threats from his authority, as his father had told him to do. And so Solomon executes justice. You may think, wow, God, you know, why did Solomon kill these? How have these people removed and killed? Every single one of them got what they deserved. Every single one of them, they did some wicked things. And so Solomon was executing justice. After that, you see Solomon's glory. You see his marriage to Pharaoh's daughter. He makes a questionable sacrifice at the high places. You see Solomon's wisdom. And also you see his administrators, his influence over surrounding kingdoms, his provisions and wealth, more of Solomon's wisdom. And you see Solomon's building projects, which the first one is the temple. That's your next villain, Amriel, the temple. It'll be letter H1. After that, you see the dedication of the temple. God makes a covenant with Solomon. You see the cost and administration of Solomon's building. His other projects, his sacrifices, his fleet. You see the interaction between him and the Queen of Sheba. You see his incredible wealth and his chariot and horse business. Now, chapter 11, you see Solomon's sin and death. Solomon's sin, like his father, basically like father, like son. He had an eye for women, and that was his undoing. First one, by marrying foreign women. They were unequal yokes. So these were women who did not believe in God alone. They had their own gods. Even though in Deuteronomy, God said a king was only supposed to have one wife. And obviously, none of these kings took that to heart, sadly, and it ended up costing them. There was consequences for that. And the amount of women that Solomon had was ridiculous. I want to say 600 or 400 wives and 600 concubines, something like that. And
700 wives and 300.
Okay, yeah, 700 wives, 300 concubines. Can you imagine having to remember that many birthdays and anniversaries?
What about their names?
Yeah, and their names.
Concubine number 493.
Yeah, so it's a sad part, really, when you have all power in a sense, and you can allow your flesh to do whatever you want, and that was his downfall. He let his lust consume him, and it was his downfall. And so the first one underneath that was marrying foreign women, then worshiping other gods. You see Solomon's punishment with the kingdom will not be given to his son. Solomon's punishment, the kingdom will not be given to his son. It will in the start, but then it'll be divided. And that enemies will win over the nation. And after that, you see the death of Solomon. Now, Roman numeral 4, you see the split kingdom. We see two kings. Two kings. Rehoboam of Judah and Jeroboam of Israel. So that's your fill in there is kings. Two kings. Underneath that, you see how the split happens. The summary there. And then after that, you see a series of kings. Bunch of names there. And then Roman numeral 5 or 6, you see King Ahab of Israel and Elijah, the prophet in Israel. So Roman numeral 6, you see King Ahab of Israel and Elijah. So that's your two fill-ins. There is Ahab and Elijah. You see Ahab's wicked sins, how he married Jezebel, worshipped Baal, and made idol groves. Then you see Elijah's ministry. You see Israel defeats Syria, guided by prophets. Then you see the event of Naboth's vineyard, which is stolen by Jezebel for Ahab, and she has Naboth killed. So Naboth, N-A-B-O-T-H, Naboth's vineyard. So that's maybe Roman numeral 6D for you, Emrio. After that,
Naboth, is it?
Yes. And after that, you see Israel and Judah fight against Ramoth-Gilead. Judah should not have sided with Israel. And you see a questionable alliance with that. And you see the prophecy of a good prophet named Micaiah. M-I-C-A-I-A-H. 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 See Israel and Judah defeated, the death of Ahab. Then last you see two more kings, Jehoshaphat of Judah and Ahaziah of Israel. And that's pretty much the finish of 1 Kings. And so we'll pick up in 2 Kings next week. Did you have any questions there, Emrio?